हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Shri Krishna Sandarbha, Adhyayana 5, Adhikarana 2, Equality of the Prakat and Aprakat Pastimes. Page 35, Anucheda 170. Though not accepting the external meaning according to Jnana and accepting the esoteric meaning about the eternal pastimes, the gopis, fearing separation by absorption in the Prakat pastimes as they had previously prayed with great misery. Right? Because they were forgetting before. Being absorbed in the Prakat pastimes, they're being absorbed in Krishna's gone away and he's not there. So then Krishna had pointed out to them that no, he's always there. So then if you remember him, then that's real, he's actually there. And so then that way then they absorb themselves in the Aprakat pastimes and they won't feel that separation. So, you know, so then previously in Prabhupada had mentioned, Jiva Goswami mentions that because they were absorbed in the Prakata identity, then there was a covering, so the Jiva Kosha. And so that they gave up, but they just want to make sure that they don't fall back into that. Dear Lord, whose navel is just like a lotus, your lotus feet are the only shelter for those who have fallen into the deep well of material existence. Your feet are worshipped and meditated upon by great mystic yogis and highly learned philosophers. We wish that these lotus feet may also be awakened within our hearts, although we are only ordinary persons engaged in household affairs. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.82.48 Udriti, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Ahus cha, the gopis said, implies that these seemingly reverential words were actually spoken by the gopis in the following mood of anger. O Supreme Lord, O directly manifested Supersoul, O crest jewel of teachers of philosophical knowledge, understanding that we have great attachment to house, wealth, and family, you previously had Uddhava instruct us, and now personally you are purifying our hearts with knowledge to destroy that ignorance. Thus we understand that your pure love for us is free from any motivation other than assuring our liberation. But how can we, unintelligent cowherd women, fix that knowledge in our hearts? We cannot even meditate steadily on your feet. The focus of realization for great souls like Brahma. Therefore, please be merciful to us and do something to make that possible. We are still suffering the reactions of our karma, so how can we meditate on your feet, which are the object of meditation for the masters of yoga, Yogeshwarer? Such yogis are immeasurably wise, but we are merely feeble-minded women. Please do something to get us out of this deep well of suffering in material life. The gopi statement, may your lotus feet arise in the minds of us who are so attached to family life, end quote, reveals their hidden anger. The following verses illustrate that pure devotees are never motivated by a desire for material elevation or spiritual liberation, even if Krishna offers such benedictions. They often refuse to accept them. Quote, one who has fixed his consciousness on me desires neither the position or abode of Lord Brahma or Lord Indra, nor an empire on the earth, nor sovereignty in the lower planetary systems, nor the eightfold perfections of yoga, nor liberation from birth and death. Such a person desires me alone. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.14. Because my devotees possess saintly behavior and deep intelligence, they completely dedicate themselves to me and do not desire anything besides me. Indeed, even if I offer them liberation from birth and death, they do not accept it. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.20.34. My pure devotees regard heaven and hell as one and the same, Srimad Bhagavatam 6.17.28. Devotees never accept liberation, which is the same, which is the result of jnana, even if it's offered by the Supreme Lord Himself. How then could the gopis, the crest jewel of all devotees, accept this knowledge? Thus it is appropriate that they express anger in this verse upon hearing the unbearable teachings of spiritual knowledge, adhyatma jnana, from the mouth of the Most Beloved. It is clear that such interpretations of this verse, which come through oral tradition, are valid for this scripture, which is full of dual meanings. Right, so it's being coming down through the parampara, like that. That's how it's there. Otherwise, then people taking it at face value, then they're going to understand it in one way, that through this jnana, knowledge of jnana, what is it? Adhyatma jnana, then they would come to that position where they would be freed from all disturbance. But that position, the shanta position, just me, how you say, appreciate the position of the Lord and that experience, then you're freed from all material entanglements. So there is no misery. But they also never feel any separation because for them, Krishna is everywhere. So you do have that aspect. So for the gopis, though, because of their relationship with Krishna, that's not actually going to cut it because they do have a sense of possession. And so because of that, then it's a matter of them being absorbed in the Lord. So the point of the adhyatma jnana, where everything is Krishna, they're already seeing Krishna in everything. Because wherever they look, they see it in context of Krishna. So that's going on. So whatever is the perfection of adhyatma jnana, that's just the natural way of dealing. So that shanta aspect is already included there, but that's not the satisfying aspect. It's then that sense of desiring to render particular services and things like that. That's what's going to be the point that the gopis are going to be absorbed in. Now, them being absorbed in these things, then the difficulty comes is they're looking at all this is for Krishna and Krishna's not here, so therefore they're suffering. So now taking that, how they're seeing everything connection to Krishna, then they apply in their meditation to Krishna, accept that Krishna is there in that meditation, then they'll always be absorbed in Krishna. Right? So that position of their jiva kosha is very different from ours. Right? We're under the three modes of nature. They in this position are not appreciating that the pastimes, the aprakat pastimes, those always going on, they can absorb themselves there. They're just taking Krishna's here, the prakat pastimes. So their so-called covering is the absorption in the prakat and not appreciating that by being absorbed in Krishna, you're absorbed in the aprakat. So it's quite different from our position. Does that make sense? So, So for the devotee, the place is not what's so important because it's a matter of serving Krishna. So wherever you are, you can serve Krishna. You can be absorbed in Krishna. So the value of a place is only as much as if it helps you remember Krishna. Right? They're absorbed in Krishna, so if in that position you can do something for Krishna, then that's nice. And if there's nothing to do for Krishna, then you just remember the Lord. So the situation doesn't actually have any significance. So therefore the heaven and hell, it doesn't matter.
I'm not sure in context of the main topic, which is prakat, aprakat, mm-hmm. and it basically means, you know, certain location.
No, it's a certain consciousness. That's the problem. That's the jiva kosha. We're saying it's a location. That's the jiva kosha. That's the covering of the soul. It's not a location. It's a matter of consciousness. They're sitting there, and they're thinking about the homes and that. You know, they're thinking of it in connection with Krishna, but the point is just thinking of your home and all that, not thinking about Krishna in that, that's jiva kosha. You're in the material platform. This is also a major misunderstanding that devotees apply here that, oh, how you say, the idea of that the living entity, so some say they can't have been in the spiritual world because you can't fall from that position. And others then saying that, no, we were in Goloka, and, in Prema, and on the topmost platform. It's all these strange approaches to how to fall. But the point is, Krishna Prabhupada says you became envious of Krishna. That's like, maybe what, to use a kind of generic kind of euphemistic term, an absolute misunderstanding. Prabhupada said it's the envy. That's what makes the difference. But because we have to satisfy our intelligence with time and place, therefore we'll say that's not the reason. It may be the reason, we don't say it's not the reason, but it's not what's, it doesn't define. Now, how can you fall from here? How can there be envy in the spiritual world and this and that? But the point is it's a matter of mentality. You change the mentality, you're here. Even though you may be situated there, just like here, if you remember Krishna, you're there. If you're there and don't remember Krishna, you're here. Yes.
So the topic in this discussion, it started with explaining the two types of Leela. It's not yet discussing the abodes of Prakat and Aprakat. We just started discussing
Leela. Okay.
Prakat Leela and Aprakat Leela. And within the Aprakat, then we just discussed Mantropasanamayi and Swarasiki. Basically what the gopis Krishna is telling the gopis to be in that Swarasiki level of Aprakat Leela. So right now, the discussion which Jiva Goswami is doing is bringing, by using gopis as an example, bringing from the Prakat manifestation to the level of Aprakat for the gopis. That they are, right now, they are in the Prakat Leela, they are experiencing that separation. Then Krishna says, when you intensify your meditation on me and purify of all anarthas, then you come to the level where you can have my association through the Aprakat pastimes. So, as you said, it's the consciousness that differentiates whether you are like doing the Prakat or Aprakat. Once this is done, then the next adhikarana is discussed on the Prakat and Aprakat abodes, because this is the main link. If this is not established, then
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. As long as we discuss about how the location is simultaneously one and different, still it's different in our minds.
Yeah, because when devotees say, when fell from the spiritual platform, we'll take it as Goloka. It's just like 100% default setting. We fell from Goloka. No, we fell from the Boma Leela. Oh, but that's not the spiritual world. These are the problems. These are the actual problems, because we're by conditioning, we're always thinking according to time and space. That's why you can explain the descending knowledge logically, but through logic you can't understand descending knowledge. That's the seeming illusion that, if it can be logically explained, through logic I can understand it. No, it can be logically explained, it's through faith you understand it.
Also, one of these guys who is this scholar, he introduced, instead of Prakat, Aprakat, basically Goloka and Gokula, then he introduced the third one called Bauma, because what I sensed, at least from what I read, there is nothing like the three different things.
Mm-hmm.
He introduced that in order to say that this consciousness, what makes difference, as a third place.
Yeah, I see that, because they're trying to logically make it work rather than surrender to Krishna, and Krishna reveals what's being said. Because what the acharyas are saying is very, very clear. So if they say there's two places, there's no third. Like that. Yeah, but these are the difficulties. And because it seemingly makes sense to our material logic, therefore it's more easily accepted by by the so-called intelligent and the so-called unintelligent alike. And so it becomes popular, and then you have to argue with that. And then because of that, that will create more problems. Anything material means there's duality, means there's problems. Well, the absolute resolves everything, it clears all problems. So that's always going to be a problem.
And these
approaches are always going to give a problem.
And also it's not our business to, in one sense, worry about how it happens. Because the whole point is, it said it's done by the Lord's Shakti.
Mm-hmm.
And the Shakti is what is inconceivable to the minute Jiva,
mm-hmm.
and his internal potency, and she is making it happen, the whole thing. And that's why after discussing the Prakat abodes, then the last thing that is discussed about is the internal potency of the Lord, and how Srimati Radharani is the topmost aspect of the internal potency, and she is arranging everything.
So you're showing how the Lord is transcendental. He's not material because he has a form and performs pastimes. Then you're showing how his associates are eternal. And they're also on that transcendental platform. Then how the various incarnations and avatars and all that are working, and how it's still just Krishna and his expanding and all that. Same with the associates. So their potencies expand until you end up with demigods. So then when they appear, then those demigods appear in them. And so then the disappearance pastimes means the demigods leave and go back to, means the prakat aspect where the demigods come in are within the devotees. Then the associates, then when the prakat ends, that means they go back and only the aprakat continues that we are not seeing. Then you're showing about how the prakat, not prakat, because that's the next stage. And then once you catch that, then you can get into the dhams, then that's controlled by the internal potency. And then that, then Radharani, then that brings you to devotional service of the Bhakti Sandharva. So it can be logically presented, because it's just like I was seeing, Prabhupada was explaining about the living entities. And I was thinking, you know, he got to the point where he's explaining about the humans and the animals, and because of karma, then the living living entity says, he was talking about that these animals have souls. And then I was thinking, why didn't he just start with that? But then I realized, unless you understand already that the living entity, by consciousness, then makes his next life, and that can be anywhere in the 8,400,000. Until that's accepted, you can't discuss how the animals, then, you know, being soul, living entities, then we have to deal with them properly, because otherwise we'll say, oh, there is no life, this life is finished, they're not, they have no souls. So you already have to establish the one thing before on which this one is discussed. And so many times not appreciating that, so when you, let's say there's an opportunity, you can discuss this, that comes up in a question of that you discuss. But if you see people don't accept it, you have to go back to what is the basis. And that will make it, then you can use these, you know, very straightforward logical presentations. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, their logic, they just argue with it. Their logic means to find fault in anything. To synthesize, they don't really know how to do. Basically, if they've removed doubts, then they say that, you know, it's synthesized. But actually, no, it doesn't have the positive application. So they actually don't know how to use, people aren't trained how to use logic to actually harmonize things, because they don't have an entrance to that, because you can only harmonize with Krishna. Because I'll harmonize in my sphere, just like physics will harmonize their, this, you know, universal philosophy, what's it, the universal, you know, no, physicists. They have a thing where by working out this formula, you understand the whole universe. So their thing is if you know physics, you know everything. Maybe certain things in principle, but that doesn't mean they know how to drive or how to cook or even how to use a toaster. But in their mind, because they know this formula, they know everything. They're so proud. means like they're like, they say, ridiculously proud. It means all the professors are proud, but they're the worst because they think they have this universal thing, how everything works. Maybe. But at the same time, as that's how do you apply it? That takes training. You know? And so they have this idea that, but that only works in their field. In chemistry, it doesn't work. Because they've only looked at certain aspects, because chemistry is dynamic. Physics is not. So therefore, it doesn't work there. That doesn't work in biology. That doesn't work in psychology. So each one looks at it and harmonizes in his world. So that's going to be the problem, is that, so you have to harmonize it with Krishna. That's the only way to harmonize. And then it's going to be harmonized with Krishna, in which mood there is of attraction. So we don't have that attraction of the Brajbasi, so therefore we have to follow in the footsteps, and they say this is the way it is. We have to accept it. Otherwise, you accept this third place. Who knows where you're going to end up? You know? Maybe Disney comes up with a new ride that's, you know, going through, you know, how you say, Mathura Leela or something like that. You'll end up there. You know, you'll be the guy that comes and puts people on the cart and, you know, runs through, and then when it's not running, you go in and fix it and stuff. Yeah. Who knows where you'll end up? Does that make sense? You know, so yeah. And then later they'll make a movie out of it, so. But the point is that you have to follow in the footsteps. You can't doubt. You can't say that, oh, no, it's this or that. Because where will you end up? Just like we saw, that when devotees teaching the whole Bhagavad Gita course, and at the end of the course, someone has some doubt about the morality and its application, and then the teacher reveals, you know, the doubts of the first chapter, and he agrees with Arjuna. He thinks Krishna is not correct. That means the whole rest of the Gita is incorrect. That means they won't attain Krishna. And they've just wasted however many days or weeks or months of all those devotees' time. At the same time as claiming to be a teacher. So that's called cheating. That's the cheating complexity Prabhupada talks about. So where they're going to end up, they're going to end up in that place where there are people who, you know, are pious. They accept God and they accept Krishna, but morality is more important. So therefore Krishna becomes part of his morality. So those aspects where Krishna's philosophy and his activities agree with the morality, then they'll like Krishna. In those areas it doesn't, they won't. And so therefore, you know, next life, you know, get out your red dot, you know. You're so, you know, it's like, does that make sense? You know. Bharat Mata Ki Jai Ho, here we come. You know? No? These will be Hindus. We have millions of them. So it's no big deal. However much he's got his philosophy, there's professors that have written books and have said so much more. So, you know, what's the big deal? You know, what is it? Prabhupada said, was it 645 editions of Hindu mumbo jumbo? So that's the thing, is that following the footsteps means where they put their foot, that's where you put it. You don't kind of put it, or they're going in that direction, and so going a little this way, I just wanted to check what that was, and, you know, oh, hey, what's over here, and no, this, they want to go here. Our acharyas have gone there, we just follow that. So if we point out that, oh, this acharya said this, and that acharya said that, that means then you can have doubts. So therefore, it could be this, it could be that. Who's going to decide? Of course, myself. So therefore, I set the path. So you can see, as these are all Maya's tricks, very subtle tricks, to get us to not follow the path of the acharyas. Anybody who says that they contradict each other, that's a mundane perception. I mean, 100% mundane. Because what are they basing it on? On a meaning of a word or a grammatical thing? So they don't know that, well, what happened, what do you mean by double meanings? They can't, well, how is it one word can have so many meanings that if you look at them, seemingly at first glance may be contradictory, but if you look at it, the principle is the same. So they don't see principles, so they're not actually that intelligent. So just to see details, that means that you can perceive details, that means you have intelligence. But you can't say that the intelligence is being used to its proper capacity if in doing so we simply find fault in the Lord or the devotees and in their philosophy or lifestyle. Because we have to remember, there's 400,000 different human positions. But in the spiritual world, there's only one. In the spiritual world, there's only one position. That of in love for Krishna. Then there's a difference in taste. So the sandhini makes a difference in the taste. The jnana shakti makes a difference in which taste. According to the situation and now that you have a particular taste. Therefore, then you have this particular form and all that. Then the kriya will be that relationship, therefore, is applied in this way. Like that. So it's straightforward. So one has to appreciate that the basis for the argument, because someone will say, no, but we have doubts, we have to clear, we have to... Yes, but then ask in a way to understand how it is, not that I found a fault so I can argue for hours because I think it's wrong. That's a useless mentality. I mean, totally useless. Because you won't find anything. It becomes useful when I had this doubt and you said this and you said this, that, how does it seems to be, how, please explain it. But no, there's this. But the point is you're looking at it from a material perspective. Therefore you see it. Like Arjuna is looking at material perspective. Then Krishna answers. And he's accepting. So therefore he moves through. So at the end of the Gita he says, I accept. Right? That's the whole point. Where Krishna says, I accept everything you've said. And then the teacher says, I don't. So at that point, that's when, you know, depends on how much you like to follow some social etiquette or not. At that point you either sit there through the class and then don't come back, or at that point you get up and leave. Depending upon how cultured you are. So that's the thing, is the basis of it. It's not a problem to have doubt and want that doubt to be cleared. But it has to be that you're allowing the descending process to work. Not that I found a fault, therefore there's a fault in the process, or a fault in the knowledge. No, it's a fault in our understanding. But because of pride, we say, no, I don't understand, it's not understandable. In other words, it's impersonalism. Because impersonalism is all illusion. What I say is real. So I say Brahman is real, therefore that's real. And everything else is an illusion. But it's kind of like the Shastras don't say that. So where did you get this? Yes.
The difficulty seems to be is that people cannot identify where the doubt is. Because they think it's in the details, mm-hmm. but actually, as you explain, mm-hmm. it's in the principle.
Yes.
So the process you offered, it's a very good process. You bring them to the basis, mm-hmm. and then try to explain there. Then their ego just, irritated.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and,
yes, yes.
And then they say, no, this I understand. You think I'm stupid? This is basics. We discussed this.
But yeah, as if that's higher. So when you put basics down and detail up, you know it's ascending.
Yeah.
Just from that statement.
And then you can't explain, because they block their hearing, potency, mm-hmm. and just try it. They won't listen to you.
No. So therefore don't get into the discussion. That's why you see his Prabhupada would adjust it into something that then something else that they would listen to. Mm-hmm. But that's the problem. Because the principle means it always works. And the detail may work sometimes, it may not. But unless that's appreciated, they can't get to that point. One has to have that faith that this works. But we're saying so it's because faith then becomes a fact. No, it's already fact. You have to have faith in the facts. Means we don't say that religion is faith. We say that religion is fact. then you may have faith in it or not. You know, you have faith in it, then that's your benefit. You'll move towards that. But if you don't, then you'll miss out. So it becomes a very difficult point here. It's that you're dealing with these inherent anarthas of I'm the controller and enjoyer. You know? And so that's the thing, is that the great personalities, they see where they're wrong, and then they adjust it and move forward and become great. But if with false egos, no, what I am now, I have to be great where I am now. And it's like, no. You know, it's just like, oh, we're Westerners, you know, we're fine. We're as good as Indians are a country, Westerners are, you know, another country. So it's all just countries. All countries are equal. Therefore, what we do is equal to what someone does in India. But that's just purely false ego. Because then it's about, I define what's right and wrong, rather than, no, the acharyas do. Because it's like, no, we're Westerners, so we dress like that. Where's the discussion that, no, there's the standard of the gentleman. We dress like a gentleman. That's the principle. Krishna is the highest class gentleman. Srimati Radharani is the highest class gentlewoman. So therefore, that's how it all comes down. So being cultured and refined and gentle, you know, on the platform of Vishuddha Sattva, that's the thing. They don't. It's not a particular type. It's how Krishna likes. In other words, the rules are how Krishna likes it. So he likes it this way. That's the rule. It's that way because that's how he likes it. Then to say, no, well, how can you say Krishna doesn't wear pants? But the point is no. Point is why does the Shastra say unsewn cloth? Right? And why do we see all the Vaishnava traditions from now and in the back, the past, and they use these forms of unsewn cloth? So why is it there? It's the rule. The rule means it's Krishna's desire. So that's where it comes from. Then to say, no, Krishna can wear anything, but where does that come from? That's just a mathematical calculation that, yeah, it could be anything. You know? He could also be wearing a fig leaf. You know? We want to take some traditions. You know, it's just, yeah. Banana leaf over here. And, you know, and if you're in the America, maybe a maple leaf or, you know, like that. Or, yeah, it'd be really hard. I wouldn't recommend pine needles, you know. Not much coverage and very pokey. Yeah, so, you know, these kind of things that they're saying, no. On a detail, they're saying, oh, like this, by the logic, it'd all be the same. But actually, the principle is actually where it all comes from. So if they can't work on principle, then you know that there is an ulterior motive. Either directly understood or not understood. Like you said, they don't even know the doubt. It may be sincerely they think that I'm doing the right thing. But actually, the acharyas say, no, it should be, this is the mentality. So that's why we see mentalities first. So, like Prabhupada, his expertise in music, he could have taught even top musicians music. But the point is, you get into teaching music, other than those basic things that Prabhupada gave, then people get into that, and that becomes the music, rather than, no, you're singing for Krishna. So sometimes you have a devotee that there was one devotee who would be, you know, quite well respected for their kirtan. You know, they have their own unique style, how they sing and everything like that. And devotees really like, they get inspired. So then another devotee will copy that to the point where they sound exactly the same. And so then Prabhupada would comment, no, sing in your own style. It means you just try to please. In other words, it's about pleasing Krishna. Pleasing Krishna, you're using singing. How that comes out, that becomes the way you sing. So it's not that it may come out sounding the same, but the point is you started from the point of pleasing Krishna rather than, oh, he's good at kirtan, so I'll copy him, so therefore I'll be good at kirtan. No, good at kirtan means it's about Krishna. So therefore, then Prabhupada will give those basics, but the individual has to apply it in their own life, therefore the individuality. That's why Prabhupada didn't like bureaucracy or centralization. Because both of them are anti-individual. It means like, by principle. You can't have a bureaucracy if bureaucrats can't deal with individuals. They can only go, here's the rule, you don't fit into the rule, you're wrong. You follow that rule, you're right. That's it. That's the maximum they can deal with. Anything outside of that, they're being partial. And centralization means there's one way to do it, everybody's got to do it in that way. So Prabhupada didn't appreciate because of this principle. It destroys individuality. It's the individual who surrendered to Krishna, not a society. No? I've only seen in, like they say, you know, it's like Chinese tradition in the court. You have, you know, 60, 80, you know, courtiers there, and something's going wrong, and all of them are talking in exactly one voice, exactly the same words to the emperor. I've only seen that there. I've never seen that in any other culture anywhere else. You know, but to do that, they would have had to get together and work out, and the head guy would have said, this is what we're saying, and then they all say it. So again, you know, centralized, the individual's gone. So that's why it's... So, and individuals, to please Krishna, by working with others, then you can do a bigger thing to please Krishna. So that's what controls it. So it's not that the institution controls it, it's cooperation together that creates the institution. So you've created individuals who are Krishna conscious, and you've created the inspiration to work together to do something nice for Krishna. You have an institution. But if you say, no, this is the institution, you have to fit into it, then who's going to fit? Because guaranteed the people in the room don't, it's not unanimous. So even they don't fit. Right? So you have 30 people, and let's say you have this simple majority, so 60% of that, you know, so 18, 20 people, they agree, but the other 10, 12 don't. So even amongst themselves, amongst 30 people, they can't get agreement, and they expect now hundreds of thousands or millions of people are going to just perfectly follow it. Even if you want like that, okay, maximum you get 60% to follow, 40% you won't get to follow. Don't complain, you can't make the GBC can follow. You don't get them to agree, so why are you complaining that the others aren't agreeing? So that's the thing. Centralization is not a thing. It gets rid of individuality. So these are problems where it gets rid of individuality, but it's not about us. That's the thing. The Veda, it's about the individual, but it's not about the individual. It's about the individual and their relationship with Krishna, but it's not individual-centric. It's Krishna-centric. So centralized is already there. Krishna is the center. Lord Chaitanya says that. He's the center of all relationships. You know, he's this, you know, the center of all activities, and he's the center of all results. It's Krishna-centric. That's already there. Then, now, how much you bring your everything in line with that, it'll work. But if it's no, centralization works on its own, or bureaucracy works on its own, or management works on its own, or what I think works on its own, or morality, as we saw before, works on its own, then it's mundane. You know, at best. Because mundane, you can follow God's laws and get a good material result, maybe not spiritual. But this is what, you know, Rupa Goswami says. That's it. Shruti Smriti Puranani Pancharatra Vidim Bina means without following these, it's a disturbance, that's all. And you may say, no, but we all agree, but yeah, so criminals always agree. You get a bunch of thieves together, they all agree on the plan. That doesn't mean it's not a disturbance. And if someone says, oh, how can you call leadership back? We're in the material world, we're all criminals. It's a prison. You know, like that. And people from the spiritual world come, from the regular society, the spiritual world come here and try to give us Krishna consciousness. And we have to take that. They know what's going on outside. We don't. So Prabhupada would always go for the root. And that means... He'll discuss detail as long as it's in line with being able to appreciate Krishna consciousness. But when they think the detail itself, its logic and its establishment is what's important, Prabhupada wouldn't discuss that. And if someone forces it, then he would say, this is not the way you discuss philosophy. You know, Pranipata, Pariprashna. and Sevaya. Because the point is, they're saying that, they're not applying it, other than they're personally just that they're the Lord and Master. But no, it's, you have to surrender and then follow. It doesn't mean that you lose your... And they'll say, oh, but you lose your individuality. It's like that. Where's your individuality? You're a servant of Krishna. You have a relationship with Krishna. Where's that? That's your individuality. If you say, oh, this form loses your individual, what about that form? You know, the most liberal, right, means of applying, you know, seriously, communism is the most liberal process used. Where's the individuality? Its determination is to get rid of individuality. Right, and go the other way, conservative, it's just about the individual. Then it's, the whole thing starts to fall. If you go take the right too far, you have an individual, a maverick, and you can't do anything. And you go the other way, then you have no individuality. So what makes everybody work? What's the inspiration? So you have to have individuals who are inspired to work together. And that's called relationship. So if you can establish proper relationships, the people are inspired, then you are a leader. That's real management. And if you don't, then, you know, you're as good as how close you come to that. You can inspire some people but not others, so work in that field and then you're good. So, yeah. Yeah, so these things here, it's not about time and space, it's consciousness. That's the whole thing. It means Krishna is conscious of the whole creation. So through that, he's everywhere, but at the same time, he's in his own abode. The soul is in one place in the body, but it's conscious of the whole body. So if I tap you on the shoulder, your consciousness is on your shoulder. But does that mean you're on your shoulder? You're still in the heart. So these aspects then it has to be appreciated that no, it's all about Krishna. So meditating on Krishna, then you're with Krishna. And Krishna's always performing his pastimes. Therefore, name, form, qualities, pastimes. Then when that's appreciated, and the consciousness, then we can get into, then you see is once that's appreciated, that's what's been cleared in the first parts. Right? Means Bhagavat, the Paramatma in the beginning of the Krishna, then establishes that. Then, at the end, then we can get into the associates, the dham, the paraphernalia. Because otherwise, it means they are, you could say, as side things, but the point is you have to actually have more of an understanding to appreciate them. We're taking, oh, they're lower. No, but yes, they may be lower, just like everything supporting Krishna. Compared to Krishna, everything's lower. But you have to be more mature to appreciate. Therefore, the acharyas put it in this line. Because you see, it's as he explains what's happening, then, oh, okay, then everything starts to fall into place. So it is the most logical. So... did we in any way deal with your point before, or did we get off onto such tangents that we completely missed it?
No, I mean, you answered the question right away, and then just gave the
very
alankars.
Wide-ranging applications. Okay.
It's actually very interesting that in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, Rupa Goswami, he uses the same exact technique. He explained that the avatars and expansions, it's the, like, I don't, yeah, 90% of the book, it's all about that, Krishna or Vishnu Tattva.
Mm-hmm.
And then right at the end, the second part of the book, it's very small, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it explained about the devotees of the Lord,
mm-hmm.
how they are, you know, so dear to the Lord that even Vishnu considers the worship of his devotees better than the worship of himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rupa Goswami gives the reference, but, and it's quite short, because it's even more esoteric than the Vishnu tattva.
Mm-hmm.
Because Vishnu is Vishnu, it's a stable position, and it's, you know, for a religious person, it's easy to understand. God, you know, you have to respect God for who he is. And then the devotees, and it mentions that we should worship the devotees and the Lord, but not one on the expense of the other.
Mm.
So that balance should be there. And this means, like you mentioned, it's a quite high level. At least Madhyama, because Kanishthas, they can't deal with that. They can't harmonize this.
Yes,
they can't balance it. So,
yes.
And it's just mentioned, and then that's it. That's the end.
Yeah, but and then you also see, like Sanatana Goswami and the Brihad Bhagavad Gita,
yeah.
Then the bigger part is going up to the isn't it? Which one's first?
Narada is first.
No, but I'm just saying, is it about, there's two things about the place and about the devotees.
Narada Muni is the devotee.
So the devotees are, okay, so that'll be your establishing there, then you can get into a little bit the place. So you see, it always has a... So, Jiva Goswami is their disciple. And then he just... His service was taking what they... Their presentation, and then giving the logical, you know, technical explanations to establish that what they're saying is the standard. So that's why, like you're saying, you'll see is that the Rupa Goswami's work goes in the same fashion, because it's on Bhagavatam, and this is on Bhagavatam, the Siddhartha's. But Jiva Goswami is their disciple, so he's just expanding on what they're doing. So it's following the same kind of approach, same kind of paddhati.
It's like it's establishing the connection between the Laghu Bhagavatamrita and the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Because in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, as I explained, the first four chapters describe about the whole thing and the Vishnu Tattva, and the fifth chapter describes about the Paravastha.
Yeah.
And the Paravastha are Vilasa Rupas, means that which are manifest in the spiritual world. So that is the biggest chapter of discussion, and slowly it brings to establishing Krishna as Swayam Bhagavan. And then he discusses how all of the other Paravastas are subordinate, because then he brings the aspect of rasa. It's how, you know, Krishna is with the intensity of rasa, how he deals with his devotees, and that supersedes everything, and that's how all the opulences are manifest in full in him, and not in neither Narsingadeva or even Lord Ramachandra. So it's moving in the same thing. And then the Bhakti Sandarbha, because Krishna is already established as the topmost, and then the Rasik, and then you can start discussing on
devotion. Yeah, you've established the devotees, you've established the Dham. Now you can discuss Bhakti nicely. Because then Bhakti, you're going to say, is you have these five main aspects. And so then if you don't understand what they are, then...
That's why in this Krishna Sandarbha, we could quote like full Laghu Bhagavatamrita if you wanted. Just because it becomes too much, then you're putting only where it just needs some elaboration. Then.
So you're saying that Krishna Sandarbha connects Laghu Bhagavatamrita and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? Is that was the point that you mentioned in the beginning? Because I didn't
know. No, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is next to Bhakti Sandarbha.
Okay.
Naturally moves into the next.
So Laghu Bhagavatamrita is like Krishna Sandarbha.
Right.
And Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is like Bhakti Sandarbha.
Yeah, because I wasn't clear.
Bhakti and Preeti.
And Bhakti and Preeti.
Okay.
So Jiva Goswami establishes very nice connection from all by discussing all the, for us, the so-called distinct links. No, because
he
don't, automatically connected.
Yeah, because they're all saying the same. That's the whole point. They're just showing the different angles and bringing out different aspects. So where someone's explained it very clearly, someone else would just repeat that. You don't need to add anything. You don't need to give a further explanation. Someplace where they've given a full explanation, but not in that spot, then you may refer them to the places where they did. So then you can either directly quote or paraphrase what they're saying. So let me see. You like you sometimes see like Prabhupada say, you know, Ramanujacharya on this point has said that, you know, Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. So he's not directly quoting, he's paraphrasing what he said. And in other places he may say, you know, then, you know, all the acharyas agree with this point. You know, Ramanuja says this and he'll quote his thing. And then Shankara says this and he'll quote like this. And so sometimes you get either. So there's no contradiction. So this whole thing that there is contradiction or there's need of further interpretation, these are all mundane, you know, approaches. And they're all back. For the Vaishnava line, they're a waste of time. For the Hindu Bindus, it's pretty good. You know, some new, fresh, you know, how you say, we've chewed on the sugar cane this way, but now we could turn it around this way. Look, it looks different. You know, now I can chew on it and I'll get some taste.
When the tea no more gives kick, then that's when the... When they drink tea, so when the tea no more gives the kick in the head, then that's when they start a new...
A new batch.
New lesson.
Yeah. Yeah, so like that. So we just... So this stuff has been going on since time immemorial. And of course, it works because things happen because it's inspiration. So if we're not inspired, then we don't do anything, even if it's wrong. We're inspired. And so then we'll think it's new and fresh. And like I remember the other day, the hearing about one of our physicists in the movement. He's just now, after, you know, 40 years or whatever it is, worked out something that, you know, what was said by the acharyas. And now he's presenting it as if no one else has ever understood this and no one else has ever presented it. So now he's revealing this new insight, you know, from the, you know, how you say, scientific academic angle. And this is the thing, and this is why we weren't successful. Rather than, no, it's just a matter of why do you understand that? Because you've developed more in your devotional service. So if we're not successful, you advance more. You know? Bhagavatam gives that. They want to do something. They're not confident, you know, of that position. Then they sit down and, like, you know, the Prajapatis, they sit down and meditate for 60,000 years when they realize the Lord. Then they start the activity. So that's all. It's just by doing that act of service for Krishna, then they start to Krishna reveal something. But it's not that just because now you figured it out and then no one else has figured it out. You know, like I mentioned before, it's like, I was Madhurya Kadambini, and so looking at it and the thing and getting into something came up, and I was really pushing the point of anartha nivriti. You know, if you're not trying to remove this, that, you know, how serious, you know, this, that, blah. And I had it, I think Govinda Maharaj mentioned it twice, I think Shivaram Maharaj mentioned it once. He says, it's not about anartha nivriti. You know? And I was thinking, what do you mean? It's a stage. Unless you do this, how do you go to the next? Their whole point is that if you focus on anartha nivriti, you're not focusing on prema. We're going through the eight stages to get to prema as the ninth. We're not doing anartha nivriti because anartha nivriti on its own is important. But it took quite a few years before I caught, oh, that's what they were talking about. You know? Because otherwise, sometimes I saw they'd be very strict sometimes and other times not as strict. And I'm thinking, you know, this is inconsistent. But actually, is that they knew the principle. If the person had that Krishna consciousness, then something was going wrong. Okay, you know, we can adjust that. Just keep the Krishna consciousness, adjust the other part. But if someone didn't have the Krishna consciousness, then they only deal with external form, then the external form's wrong, they're wrong. Like in karma, one syllable wrong, whole thing ruined. But in bhakti, one syllable's wrong, hey, say it again, say it right. But main thing is the devotion. Then you move forward. Even said wrong, you're still moving forward because of the devotion. then eventually you may get it right, or if it's not so important, it may never happen. You know, so then you start to see, oh, okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, so you see those technical things and you think, oh, how come he doesn't use this technical thing here? You're like, that is because it's just like Govind Maharaj, he's doing kirtan. Now, he regularly does kirtan. You know, like days and days in a row, there might be a little break and somewhere else and all that. So that means you have, you know, kartals, mridanga, you have the singer, you may have some other instruments, okay? Now you have a traditional standard of what you would do. But the thing is then problem comes up is, who can play the traditional way? How many mridanga players have that ability to play all the traditional beats and catch the right mood? Right? Because some can play whatever they're playing to catch the mood. They don't know all the technical beats. Some people know all the technical beats, absolutely don't catch the mood. I mean, just like, you know, like really miss it. And so to find a person who can play technical and catch the mood, of the two, which is better? The mood. So he'll focus on the mood, because wherever he goes in the world, generally you can find a mridanga player who has the right mood. And if not, then he'll bring with him. But otherwise, he catches the mood. So then, it's a matter of play a beat that works. So better a beat that works in the right mood than you know, the right beat without the mood. And worst, of course, is the wrong beat in the wrong mood. You know. And so then, you know, it falls into place. And so, you know, this other way of thinking, he's so into kirtan, why doesn't he always push the traditional thing? Because people get distracted by that. Like, so, yeah. And so he would rather have the pure kirtan. And so whoever has the mood and tries to apply themselves, someone has a good mood, he's happy that they're there. Someone's technically good but doesn't have a good mood, he doesn't like. I remember one time he was talking about one of the instrumentalists. The guy was a really good player, you know, he was, you know, probably in his middle age like that, probably been playing for quite a long time, you know, decades. So technically he could play really good and he could improvise and do all that. But after the kirtan, Maharaj was saying, he's always trying to go through the roof. But, you know, we don't, the kirtan, you're doing mellow, you're going like this, you speed it up, and then at the very end you may go through the roof for a little something to give the taste. And then you'll bring it back down. He says he's always going through the roof. You know, everybody plays. He has to play more far out than anybody else. You know, the different instrument play, he's got to do something, you know. But then it doesn't come out, even though technically he was good. And so he'd come around a few times, but then at some point it stops coming because no one's going, oh, he's so fabulous. So, you know. That's the point. The devotion is the main thing. The kirtan's about the devotion. Then the detail comes later. So you see, Prabhupada would give indication, leave stuff, show stuff. And then if people picked it up and could use it in the devotion, then it's good. But if they picked it up and didn't use it in the devotion, that's a waste. And even if they don't pick it up but they catch the devotion, it works. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I remember Madhava one festival, Ukraine festival, which is actually bigger than Mayapur festival. It's like 7,000-8,000 devotees go there. And then, like you were explaining, because Madhava, he is very fine mridanga player. Mm-hmm. And when you are mridanga player, it's like every sound makes you, you know, uptight. if it's done wrong.
Yes.
So he couldn't find anybody who matches his mood. Mm-hmm. Although he tried to explain this and that. And then for first day or two he was trying, but it didn't work. And then last few kirtans he said, okay, dear devotees, we're just gonna chant with harmonium. Mm. And then of course all those who came for music just left. Mm-hmm. And then he actually told me personally, he said those kirtans were the best because it was all around the holy name. It was very mellow. Mm-hmm. He was just playing harmonium and the voice, mm-hmm. and everybody really tuned in.
Yeah, yeah.
And no strangers in the audience because, you know, no.
Those like, guys left. Well, that's the fun. When they left, now the mood can become good.
So those who appreciated, they got the thing, they got the name. And those who came for something else, they didn't get nothing.
Yeah.
So that was like really interesting experience. But many people complained to me. They say, "Oh, Madhava is puffed up, man. Like, what is he doing? What he thinks of himself?"
Yeah.
He didn't care.
No. Because the point is this. Name me one of those kirtaniers who's complaining that could sit down straight alone with just a mridanga or a kalchal or a harmonium, because you can't play them all at once, alone, and sing straight for 6 hours to the deities without falling asleep, and not only that, do that every night for years.
Yeah.
Just one name, one. So therefore, they say, as we say in America, step back, Jack. You know, just, you know, it's not about that. And then at the same time, you don't want to go the other way as, no, real kirtans, only harmoniums, none of these other things, we don't need that. That's also then, you can go that way. So that's the problem, is these kirtaniers, you know, really serious, they have to keep them from going off here, going off there. It's just, you know. And then if people get, they're attached to that, then they'll start another thing that you can get. So then you go to their thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, we're all equal, we're all music, we're all this and that. Okay, then go there. Everyone else will go to this guy's kirtan.
Yeah.
You know, why does he get an hour and I only get half an hour? You know, I'm a better musician. Okay, then take the whole festival. They'll start another festival. You know, because it's for Krishna. It's about, you're singing for Krishna. You're singing to please Krishna. That's the thing. You know, it's like what was it? The Lab and Kush defeated Hanuman by having the children do Ram Nam Kirtan. Now he is a classical musician. It's not generally known, but he, you know, he speaks Sanskrit. He knows Kali. He knows all these things. So he's a, like, you see him sometimes with those things, you know, because he knows all the things. But a bunch of kids, tell me, the little kids, they're going over and they're just, you know, what are they going to be doing? And so he just went down and sat with them, and he's clapping and there are things like that. And then, you know, Lab and Kush could defeat the rest of the army, you know, like this. And so, that's the whole point. There's people that are into actually the holy name. If it's simple but it's sincere, it's good. And it's very elaborate and all that, but then no taste. Like that. So that's just the way it is, because it's Krishna. And Krishna's everything being Krishna, therefore when it's in line with pleasing Krishna, that place will be pleasing. It doesn't matter if the arrangements are fabulous or not. You know, if it's all pleasing to Krishna and you can add nice things to add even more, then great. But otherwise, it works.
Yeah.
The words the gopis speak in this verse may be interpreted as follows. O son. Oh, that's where it came from. Means it is clear that such interpretations of the verse which come through oral tradition are valid for this scripture, which is full of dual meanings, right, for Bhagavatam. So that's what we got into, is that the acharyas say that's the mood and all that, and that's then what's important. That's what becomes important. While the other technical points and this and that, that's not what's important. It's there, but the point is it's the meaning that Krishna meant for the gopis, you know. So those who appreciate it, then they'll discuss it. And those who don't, they'll talk about adhyatma jnana and, you know, benefit their life from that aspect. The words the gopis speak in this verse may also be interpreted as follows. O sun who directly destroys the darkness of ignorance, we are scorched by the heat of this philosophical knowledge. We are chikora birds that live only on the moonlight radiating from the moon of your beautiful face. Therefore, come back to Vrindavan and bring us to life with your pastimes, such as Rasa Leela. And then, continuing. The masters of yoga meditate upon your lotus feet within their hearts, but we hold them above our hearts, upon our breasts. Only by holding them are we able to maintain our lives, and not otherwise. Those with deep intelligence meditate on your feet, but we have shallow intelligence. Therefore, as soon as we start meditating on your lotus feet, we drown in the ocean of swooning. So where is the question of meditating? Furthermore, meditation upon them is the means of upliftment from the well of eternal existence. But such meditation cannot uplift us who have fallen into an ocean of separation from you. Certainly, we gopis have not fallen in the well of material life, having renounced the happiness of husband, home, and children from an early age. If Krishna says, come to Dwarka and I will enjoy with you there, the gopis reply, Sri Vrindavan is our home and we are too attached to it to take up residence anywhere else. It is there alone that you attract us by wearing peacock feathers in your turban and playing enchanting music on your flute. We can be saved only by seeing you in Braja, and not by any other kind of meditation or theoretical knowledge of the self, Atmagyan. Sardarta Darshani 10:82-48. We should have a small glimpse of you, since we are most unfortunate. O Krishna with the lotus navel, your lotus feet should arise in our minds by remembering your teachings. What is impossible about that? The best yogis meditate on those feet in their hearts. The best yogis meditate on those feet in their heart. Feet in their hearts. But we, when we start to remember you, just faint. The Lord said to Uddhava, my dear Uddhava, for those women of Gokula, I am the most cherished object of love. Thus, when they remember me, who am so far away, they are overwhelmed by the anxiety of separation. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:46-5. They confirm their statement by saying that persons with undisturbed intelligence, on directly seeing the Lord, can meditate on the Lord, but our intelligence is disturbed by the desire to see you. Right? So others can meditate on the Lord, but as soon as they think of the Lord, they want to see him. Therefore, they have separation. Okay. They compare his feet to lotuses because by the touch of those feet, their pain will be eliminated. This will not happen just by remembering him. By removing your suffering and separation in meditation, just as the yogis remove suffering by samsara by meditation, my feet will arise in your mind. End quote. Your feet are the cause of deliverance for people who have fallen in the well of samsara, but we have drowned in the ocean of separation. We experience even more suffering on starting to remember you. And Krishna, quote, I have come now. Please experience me directly at every moment. One thing you might do in these, when they do this, is put the quote part in one and then drop the next where the gopis speak, see Krishna, gopis, Krishna, gopis. You know, just as a regular thing whenever you have it like that. I have come now. Please experience me directly at every moment. We are not independent, then, end quote, then gopis. We are not independent. We belong to others' houses. Geham jushtam, but we cannot do that. Or, quote, let it be your own home, Gokula, the abode of our natural love, fulfilling our desires where we previously had pastimes with you. Let it not be in Dwarka. They have love for him with a particular desire. But let it be that person who stole our hearts in our youth. End quote. Since we cannot meditate on your feet in our minds, then it's possible for us to come to Dwarka. Or we do not want to come. We will be saved only if you personally come to Vrindavan. So, meditating on Krishna, they fall into this ocean of separation. So that's why then Krishna is... Because when you're meditating, you'll be meditating on a particular situation. So that'll be the mantra upasana mind. Right? And so then Krishna's saying, move into the swarasiki of the apricot pastimes. So then, by meditating upon him there, then they're in the dynamic, so it's not the separation, they'll actually be with him. Does that make sense? So at the time, they'll be completely absorbed, and then when that meditation breaks, then they'll feel that they'll be back in the prakat, and then they'll feel that separation. Then there'll be more, then they'll meditate on Krishna, and then they'll go. So they go back and forth. But you see, it also is very nice because it's here, how wonderfully he wraps it up. Because now they're talking about the place. They're talking about the dog. Why not anywhere? Because if that's the thing, they could be in Dwarka and that. No, because the place then is where all these, you know, where we know you, and you can perform all these activities in this way. So then they will stay in that place, but they'll meditate on that place, and that will be then the absorption of the prakat pastimes. Because otherwise they're going to be, as we saw, you know, as he said, and their youth. So then Krishna is that youth, and Radharani is that same youth, and they will be together. So that's the point. So let's go back to Vrindavan. We see that in Chaitanya Charitamrita with that verse that Lord Chaitanya would quote, and then Rupa Goswami wrote that. You know, and then that became part of the book, and then you see in the Lalita Madhava, that has that theme there, is that let's go back to that place. I mean, it doesn't mean that they won't continue there. Those pastimes will continue, but in that mood, that they'll go back there. Yes?
So while expressing this, first they express their Sthayi Bhava, and then for Vibhavas to manifest, the Alambara Krishna is Vyadu Kumar will not incite it. So he has to be as Raja Kumar, and then they as Ashraya also should be in the same mode. And then the Uddipanas are manifest only in Vrindavan, it cannot be manifest in Dwaraka. So then how that the Rathi
cannot
nourish and become into Rasa? Then there is no Anubhava and Sattvikas.
Not bad.
This is a scientific explanation of the rasa.
Yeah, but it's only when one appreciates this, then now you can present. That's the point, is that when it's there, then you can present it logically. But through logic, you can't understand it. Yeah, that's the... You know, that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, when you hear the shabda, then you, through manana, analyze and try to apply it. When you can actually see it in your situation, that's realization. So in other words, through anuman, you'll start to get understanding if you're practicing and applying. But when you actually see it in pratyaksha, then you realize it. So in other words, through logic, you can't explain it. But once you've understood it, then you can explain it through logic. So, no?
Yeah, I was thinking also about Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
No, not you explain it through logic, you can explain it logically. Because logic is never going to do anything. Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, he's mentioning Shravanadasa and then Varanadasa. And then the Varanadasa is an acceptance, what you've heard, actually. So that acceptance seems to happen not because you're convinced, but because you have enough faith to accept it,
yes.
Then you can move into Smarandas. Yes. Otherwise, we hear, we try to meditate, but because we didn't accept, we missed the middle part. Somehow, you know.
Mm-hmm. Or think we'll just go from one to the other. I've heard all do, but you have to.
And then without acceptance, which is based on faith, or on the level of Krishna consciousness, which means faith anyway. So then you can proceed further. Otherwise, you think you meditate, but it's just a mental play.
Yes. That all explained, because the sahaja is just take it from you here and then you meditate.
Yeah.
There's no acceptance. I mean, they'll call it acceptance. That I've heard that, so I am that. But that's like the Mayavadi, is I am that, you know. But you are what? Because they're meditating on that body, so you are that body? Or you're the person who has that particular rati for Krishna, that's who you are. So that's what he's saying. The Varnadasa is accepting that surrender of the gopis. But Sahajis, it's not about the surrender, it's about the form and activities of the gopis and how they're enjoying that. And the Sahajis want to enjoy that. So then they miss. They missed the whole thing. So then what we see is that how the acharyas explain all this, you know, the process coming up is very different than the sahajyas. They just, because I've heard, I'm automatically now an uttama. It's like, no, you have to surrender, you have to accept. You know, so that acceptance doesn't mean that it's the mood that makes it, because that's what establishes the whole thing. Like you said, there's the udipans, because it's the mood. You have a mood, that particular rati, that sthayi bhava. That being there, therefore, then there's the alambana, there's Krishna, you know, the form of Krishna that inspires you, and the activities and all those that are the udipans. Right? That, so that Braja Kumara is the alambana, and then those udipans of Braja Kumara, that's what's going to inspire them, and so they won't see that in Dwarka. They can see Krishna and remember those, but that'll put them back in Vrindavan, so they still won't be there with him. So that's what they're saying, let's go. So only in the you know, in the external we see they don't go. But we see is also there's the pastime Rathi Yatras where they take him back. Mm-hmm. So that's again the double meaning. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you don't like double meanings, you won't like Rathi Yatra.
I mean, in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, when it is explained that the Bhagavatam is simultaneously easy and difficult to understand, mm-hmm. that's because of the multiple meanings. Mm-hmm. And then the first meaning is the obvious meaning, or the direct meaning, that abhidha vritti. Mm-hmm. Then the second is a lakshana vritti, or the indirect. Then the third is yoga ruti vritti means the traditional meaning. Mm-hmm. And then the last, which is like here we see that the acharyas, they explain that level, which is vyanjana vritti, it's the hidden meaning. Mm-hmm. So the hidden meaning is not revealed, therefore when we you know, hear for example Uddhav Gita or this kind of instructions given by Krishna to the gopis, we see there abhidha vritti, which it sounds really strange. I mean, yeah, you know, jnana and meditate on me and this and that, but without the vyanjana vritti, we won't understand what's actually going on.
Yes.
And it is revealed. We can, you know, by analyzing the thing, we can get there. It's just mm-hmm. not happening. Mm-hmm. So this is the difficulty with the Bhagavatam, because mm-hmm. it has multiple meanings and hidden meanings and direct mm-hmm. and indirect, and then we have to actually know where is direct, where is indirect, where is the traditional, and where is mm-hmm. the hidden meaning. So mm-hmm. this is...
Yes, so that's where the acharya's comments.
Yeah.
But at one point, Bhaktivinoda Thakura gives a indication. I think he also is here. I think it's probably, I think it was just some pages back where it was, the point was made is that you have that, it means, since the Shastra is Krishna's, you know, breathing, and what it's documenting is his desire, therefore every syllable, you know, every word, every, you know, phrase and verse and all that, then they all should be seen in the context of how it relates to him as Bhagavan.
Yeah.
Because the aspect of understanding him only as Brahman or only as Paramatma, these are specific functions of the soul. They're not complete functions of the soul. So through karma, attachment to karma and that, you can, and in the context of Krishna, you can understand, appreciate Paramatma, because he's the judge, he gives the results. He gives what should be done, and he's the judge to the witness and the judge. So it's all in the context of karma. You know what I talk about? He's the witness, he's the judge, you know, he's the lawgiver, you know, he's the goal. Or like this kind of things, or he's the giver of results, all these kind of aspects. So you can understand him up to there, but you haven't understood the complete whole. You're not using all the functions of the soul. You're only using, you know, that chit part. But your knowledge is less because you're not looking at the soul or at God completely. And the ananda is going to be less because it's only material results. Well, then the jnani, then even though it's higher from the intellectual and you have the liberation aspect, which means it's beyond the material, it's still not up to the standard spiritually. And so you can only understand Brahman because you see all pervading and you going beyond the illusion and all these kind of aspects like that. So it's only Bhagavan, then that can only be understood through devotion. So Paramatma and Brahman can be understood if there's just a touch of devotion. But it's specifically karma and jnana. But Bhagavan can only be understood through bhakti. So you can talk about Bhagavan to at least those who appreciate Paramatma. Just they don't think that way. They always think in the way of karma. So when you talk in pure bhakti, they don't go against that. It's just that they generally don't think like that. You know, and the others, then there's a problem because they don't accept form, this, that, blah. So the actual direct meaning is what is in line with pure unalloyed devotion. That's the real meaning. And any meaning that seems to be hinted at as karma and jnana, those are the indirect. So you have the external level of abhida means directly according to the words used and the grammar used, and you can see that it means this. Yeah. Then you have the lakshana means that that won't work because it's using some poetic aspect, and so you have to take, you have to understand the poetic, how it's, you know, what the actual meaning is through poetics. Now you could see that either in relationship to the hidden meaning or the traditional meanings or karma or jnana. So since karma and jnana are kicked out in bhakti, then that also makes it harder to latch on to Bhagavatam because that's what we're used to. So you have the, if you're looking at the mechanical point of Abhideya, you know, or Abhida Shakti, yes, that'll have there, but why is Abhideya there? Because of Krishna's desire, because of the Prayojana. Right? So then, understanding that Prayojana, your relationship, how to do, that's the real understanding. So in other words, the hidden is actually the deeper direct meaning.
Yeah.
So that's the whole point, is the hidden. So it's not that, oh, you have these four and each one, you know, like this. No. There's the direct meaning and the deeper direct meaning. Because you talk about the surrender of the Brajbasis, they all have that surrender. But then how that's applied by the gopis, that's unique. You know, so that's why this Lord Chaitanya says the method conceived by the gopis, that's the best. Because even here, they're complaining about meditating on them, throws them into an ocean of separation. You know, you say, oh, by meditating on him, you get out of the well of material existence. We're not in the well. We already gave up that a long time ago, you know, as kids. You know, so now is the thing is by us, that we get overwhelmed by this separation. So Krishna is showing to them how that's because you're meditating on Krishna in his pastimes in the Prakat, and he's not there. Because in the Prakat, he's in Dwarka or Mathura. But in the Aprakat, he's right there in Vrindavan. So meditating on there in the Swarasthiki pastimes, then they'll be absorbed in him, they won't feel that separation. And so then it comes to be the natural thing, is being absorbed like that all the time. Then when Krishna comes after the killing of Dantavakra, then it just wraps up into the apricot because everybody's absorbed. So you have these simultaneously one and different, these seemingly overlapping. And so, is that, yes?
Our main process is the changing of the holy name.
Yes.
So can we say, because different mantras were mentioned previously and we're now familiar with them, is that in the beginning the Maha Mantra appears to the sadhaka as the mantra Mayupasana, and then the later in its natural form then it's a Svarasiki meditation.
Yes, yes. What's it, what's that other form? You have Tarak Brahmanam. What's the other one called? Prema?
Paraka is called Premaka.
Prema Paraka? Or
Paraka is deliverance. Paraka. Paraka. P.
Yeah.
This is T and this is P. Paraka means...
So Prema Paraka Nam and Tarak Brahma Nam.
Yeah, but it's just use the word Paraka, but it's...
So it's Paraka Nam.
Yeah.
Oh. It doesn't use the word prema. I thought prema was part of that thing.
Paraka means the word prema.
Oh, paraka means prema, but it also means it delivers prema.
Yeah, I think it's in the beginning of this. Yeah, it's in the beginning.
You mentioned, I thought prema was part of the name, the definition. Okay, but in any case.
What's that?
It's in Lagu Bhagavatamrita.
Those definitions?
Yeah, Taraka.
See, so also is there in the beginning, for us, chanting Hare Krishna will get us out of material consciousness, out of material existence. So it's actually, we're looking at is Tarak Brahmanam. Right? So Taraka means liberation. So it's the transcendental name that will free us from material existence. But
yeah.
Then, as you go, you start seeing it as Paraka instead of Taraka.
Yeah. So it's the same name, but...
It's just you, different features. Just like Krishna is one, but we may see a particular aspect.
Yeah.
So it's just as we go, the understanding deepens, and then one gets more of a...
Okay. Yes, thank you.
Okay. Okay. He accepted their mood, for in the next chapter it is said that he showed them his mercy. Sukadeva spoke thus the verse. Vriti. Next, the apricot pastimes are described along with the prakat pastimes in order to establish that one shouldn't differentiate between the prakat and apricot lila. Okay, that'll bring us to the next anuchaya. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.